Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic today on the show. Matt Penny is with me in the building. We're going to dive deep into your questions and we're going to talk some NBA draft betting props, some of the most important stuff that people care about this time of year. We got Jacob and Zach on the ones and twos behind us producing the show.
Yes.
The way this is going to work today, the first 20 to 25 minutes, we're going to dive deep into NBA draft props. We're going to run through the odds for the first overall pick, second overall pick, third overall pick. We're going to talk a little bit about the first overall pick movement because that's kind of interesting in regard to Paolo. Then we're going to do NBA draft props. Zach is literally just going to flash up random NBA draft over unders, and we're going to talk about the ones that he flashes up, and we're going to say over under within 1 minute, explain why, and then move on. About the 25 minute mark of this show, we're going to start doing mailbag questions. We're going to go basically for 35 minutes until we are out of questions or until we run out of time. So we're doing about an hour today. Penny, I've not yet introduced you really.
Hey, how are we doing?
What up, Ben? How's it going?
Everything's going fantastic with me. I feel like, and I've had people ask, are you tired talking about this draft class? I'm not, but I also feel like, and we were talking before we hit record here, that we've put in the work, that we've talked about them so much. It's sort of like a marathon runner, how like the day before the marathon, like they don't run. They have like the pasta dinner, they pick up their number, they relax. I feel like that's what this is right now for us. It's not this stressful thing where we're going bananas. We're answering mailbag questions. We're talking props. It's fun stuff. More so, how are you? You released a 93,000 word. I don't even know how I want to phrase this. Draft Bible, draft guide, draft manifest, which is fantastic. And obviously a labor of love, other than Keegan Murray being criminally too low. I thought it was perfect. How do you feel? How is the sleep? Are you like waking up at night worried about like the 53rd pick should have been 51st, or where's our mental at right now?
I'm doing well. It was funny. I was just on Titus and Tate. That'll be coming tomorrow, I believe. And their producer, Jim Cunningham, who is terrific, he literally listed out a list of great American novels that are shorter than the draft guide. And I was just I think I've heard of like half of these. I knew that the first two Harry Potter books, they're always the ones that I note as being shorter.
Really? That's actually impressive. Because the Harry Potter, so, even if you didn't read them, you remember kind of growing up, whatever, they were really thick. Like those books were not short either. As I got on in time.
The first two are not bad. I did not write Goblet of Fire length shit. I will say that. Having said that, though, it's a labor of love. I enjoy doing it. I have so much fun, you know, releasing it out into the world. I'm so appreciative of everyone who, you know, sent me kind feedback on it or just said like it's psychotic, because it kind of is. Let's be real with it.
There's a dash, right? Isn't there a dash of psychosis and madness and genius too? So it's got to be that. It can't be the full labor of love. There needs to be some craziness.
Yeah, like 50% psychosis, 45% madness, and then like 5% genius, I would say. But no, it's super fun. I obviously also released a mock draft today, which is a good way to transition into us talking about draft props, because you know, obviously when I do the mock, I am projecting the way this thing is going to go. When I do the draft guide, I'm just telling you what prospects I like at the end of the day and where I have them ranked. So in that vein, I think that we should start by talking about the number one overall pick prop. Zach, if you could flash that one up on the screen for us.
Look at how high tech we are now, growing.
It's evolving. Unbelievable.
Oh, man.
Jabari Smith is currently down to minus 185. He was floating down around like 145 at one point yesterday. Chet Holmgren has retaken the second spot after heavy action got Paolo Banchero up from like, he was at 18-1 in some books, 12-1 in some books, and is now at 2.4-1 at plus 240. Did you have any strong reaction as the markets kind of pushed Paolo toward the number one spot and then created mass hysteria in NBA front offices with people wondering like, wait,
who did they talk to? Who was that?
Who do we know?
I really try to stay away from it. Today was the first day I actually looked at some of them because so much changes and this is going to change again. I don't know how much the top pick will. The rest of the draft, it's so wide open with trades and hey, is he going seventh or is he going ninth? It really depends on the team. There's a lot of teams trying to move up. Some trying to move back and that'll shake out a lot of it. I was surprised a little bit how significantly Paolo shifted. The workout feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. We talked about that on the last podcast. I don't know if number one in Orlando is necessarily the place where he's going to fall on draft night. I don't really love these odds to hammer one side or the other. It's funny how it moves now by the day. If I had to, he said, what's your money on? I would still take Jabari Smith Jr. as the favorite, and obviously on the board it's the favorite there too, but it's not like alluring enough for me to say, hey, I'm going to put some money on it.
So if you remember on the last podcast we recorded, we were asked this question by Jack Miller, who writes for Establish the Run and is always very curious in these props. He literally asked us, like, how would you handicap the number one overall pick race right now? And you just handed it off to me. And I said, look, I think that Jabari at minus 200 is probably a little bit aggressive. I would have him at minus 165, and I would have Chet at, you know, minus one or plus 130, and then maybe Paolo at 4 or 5 to 1. Chet and Paolo have kind of closed a little bit, but the markets kind of came back a little bit toward where my initial reaction is, and that's where it was at yesterday. So it was literally at Jabari at like minus 160. So I am not super surprised by the movement. I think it's mostly a reaction to the fact that NBA front offices are genuinely split on who they see as the number one overall pick, despite the fact that people who do mock drafts like myself, John Gavoni, Jeremy Wu, guys that, you know, have real sources and guys that have done this well in the past, we all had, unfortunately, a consensus where all three of us had Jabari, Chet, then Paolo. And I still think that that's by far the most likely outcome here at the end of the day, is that it goes Jabari, Chet, then Paolo. But I also am cognizant that I don't think that this decision was made like immediately upon when the lottery happened. And these guys are all very close. These guys are all really ridiculously close. And I do think that there's a real chance, like the pre-draft process maybe could have swung things for Orlando in a real tangible way. I don't think this was done by any stretch of the imagination when the lottery happened. I don't know that it was done as of, you know, a week ago, right? I don't know if it's done yet, to be honest. Most of the time, the way that draft week works is that teams spend Monday and Tuesday finalizing their board, maybe a little bit into Wednesday, and then they take Wednesday and Thursday to assess the market and see, you know, what is out there, basically. So I would imagine that Orlando is, you know, finalizing its decision now, and we'll see what it ends up being. But I still think that the way the odds are listed, with Jabari Smith at number one, Chet at number two, Paolo Banchero at number three, I think those are right.
They are right. And just as a prospect, kind of like quick breakdown on it too. And you talked to us with Andrew and Alex. I know it's the NBA, the athletic NBA pod, or down to Dort, down to Dunk, whatever we're down to do. it's cool how they're three front court players and also so different. It's not like they're very similar stylistically and they're whatever the way they play and say, well, you know, Jabari did this a little bit better than Chet. Like Chet just defensively is head and shoulders above these guys. Like Jabari Smith Jr. is not a bad defender, but like that type of rim protection. Then Jabari Smith's jumper is so much further ahead than the other guys. Then Paolo, just like the self-creation, is so much further ahead. So it's like, what do you value within your overall team construct? And it's a good problem to have at number one. Despite there not being like a traditional tier one guy, it's a really good piece to build around whatever else you get to.
Yeah, so I actually texted someone that works in the betting industry earlier today. I wonder if there is value on Jabari when he was down at like 145 earlier today. I was kind of thinking that might be the case. So I wonder if the market has just gone a little bit too far in the direction of Jabari and gone a little bit too far in the direction of Paolo at the end of the day. So, okay, Zach, real quick, let's run through the odds for number two overall.
Here we go. Oh, here's good.
Chet Holmgren is minus 175, Jabari Smith plus 160, Paolo Banchero plus 300. I think it's much more likely that Chet Holmgren ends up being the number two overall pick. I think these odds are correct. I don't know that I see a lot of value here. Do you?
I don't, but if you're just like an absolute degenerate, I don't think Paolo Banchero plus 300 is like a bad thing to take a flyer on. Because I'm kind of under working assumption that Jabari's going one, and the decision's going to be two, is it Chet or Paolo? Oklahoma City has kept it close to the vest forever. Did they trade out of there? Did they do something funky? They're known for doing stuff differently. That would be a different pick than sort of what you alluded to, the consensus of what everyone else has.
Well, and for what it's worth, I think different for them, given what the there have been random reports out there that they like Jaden Ivey, right? And we don't have Jaden.
And wouldn't that play into it? Like if they like Jaden Ivey, they say, hey, we can give it four. If they somehow traded, it was a flip, a three-way pick or whatever. Because it says second overall pick. It doesn't say who Oklahoma City's pick is. If somebody trades up, do they take Paolo Banchero? Possibly.
Right. And Jaden Ivey is sitting at 20-1 right now to go second. I like that more than I like Paolo at 3-1. If you're looking for a flyer, but I think it's much more likely that Chet goes number two. Zach, flash up number three overall. We've got Paolo Banchero minus 320, Chet Holmgren plus 550, Jabari Smith plus 600. The fact that Paolo has slid so far back toward the number one overall pick in terms of the odds because sportsbooks have taken so much money on him now at number one, combined with the fact that he is still minus 320, him going number three is actually the biggest favorite out of all of these top, realistically, like five picks, I think, even. To me, that is incongruous and says that it is – the line is moving more as a liability – from a liability perspective in regard to sports books, as opposed to real tangible information. You also have to remember too, these lines typically, like, sports books are comfortable sticking to their line. If they're like really comfortable sticking with their line, those lines, like in games and futures and everything, those are more based on like algorithms. These are like informational, like exotics almost in some ways. And I think sportsbooks have to be a little bit more aggressive in regard to covering their ass in terms of liability. Again, this isn't to say that Paolo has no chance to go number one. I think that the odds now are like somewhat commensurate with what they should be. But I just also think Jabari is the clear favorite, and I think we should go forward from here.
Yeah, and no value in this third overall. No money here.
Okay. Let's move forward. Zach, you are up. You're going to post random draft over-unders. Right. I will read them off, and we will dive deep.
Do it.
Number one, Ty Washington. His draft position over-under is 19.5. That is not really juiced much. It's at minus 120. Matt Penny, where are you at? Ty Washington, over-under 19.5.
Over for me. I think you mocked him at 17. 18?
19.
Of course you did. There's going to be so many like this. I would take slightly over because we have to account for some of the risers who we'll get to later, and Dalen Terry and Jalen Williams. I think there would be, could potentially be some party crashers that are bumping down a few spots. I think he goes to the 20s. Obviously, it's a line that's right on, but I'll go over.
I'll go under. I think it's very slight. I would not bet on this at all. I would stay away from this entirely. Ty was one of the toughest guys for me to slot in the mock draft. At the end of the day, I'm not totally sure what's going to happen with him on draft night yet. And that's concerning because I really like Ty. I have a lottery grade on him, as people know. I'm a fan. Zach, you are up. Let's go. Number two, Johnny Davis, over under 9.5. The over is juiced to -260. The under is, I believe, at +200. I like the under at +200 here, actually. I think that there's some value on that. I think it is more likely that he goes over 9.5. But when we account for the fact that you can get 2-1 on your money at under, that might be the odds that I would take.
You look like such a Vegas sharp right now, like just a little like zany, go around. It's 2-1. I'm going to go over as much as it breaks my little heart here. Yeah. I'm a huge Johnny Davis stan, as we've covered many, many episodes. I think it's more likely he's 10 to Washington, 11 to New York. Both teams involved in trade talks too, so who knows? But I would go over here safely. Yeah. Not safely, also, but there's only a few spots before that when like could like Portland shock us at 7, maybe. Could New Orleans at 8, maybe. San Antonio, I don't know. But it's just so much more likely the candidates there for him to go like 10 to 15, really.
Yeah. Okay. Zach, you're up next. Number three, EJ Liddell, over under 20.5. By the way, Johnny Davis, I have at 9 on the mock.
Of course you do.
Ty Washington, I have at 19. He's over under 19.5.
EJ Liddell,
20. EJ Liddell, I have a 20 right now.
So who read your draft guide? Who got it first? Can I see your email history? Is there like John at Vegas.com or something?
Yeah, I like the over here a little bit more than the under, but I would stay away from this. What do you think?
Over. I would say over. If we're hedging within the hedge here, if we're saying Ty is somewhere in that 17, 18, 19 range, I'm guessing Chicago probably goes a guard at 18. So you're betting on does Minnesota or San Antonio take him? I think Atlanta takes him at 16. I don't think Houston takes him at 17. So I would go over.
I wonder. Yeah. I wonder if like Charlotte would consider him at 15 if they keep that pick
high.
And
yeah.
Maybe look at moving PJ Washington in order to like get like maintain cheap value for someone who's like a 6'7" forward who can kind of do a lot of stuff.
So if you did that, let's say Charlotte takes him at 15. So 13, you're not going with the world famous mock draft darling of Mark Williams. You're not going Jalen Duren. You're not going to draft two front court guys at 13 and 15 is my question to you.
Why not?
We're doing the two big thing again. When's the last the?
But EJ is not really a big. Like EJ can shoot a little bit. He's more of a four.
Right. Like, the sell is like he's, I don't want to say poor man's, but he's like Grant Williams light. He's not the defender, so don't yell at me. Yeah. But it's like a shooting guy that plays in the front court. That's more. He's closer to a 5 than he is a 3. Put it that way. So I consider him a front court guy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would say I would stay away from this number basically with EJ.
Over.
All right, Zach, you're up next. Tari Eason over under 17.5. We're 4-for-4 now. I have Tari at 17 on my mock. Right
I have
now.
Your I have your draft guide minimized. Should I just pull it up? We start like we'll just read off a name, put a 0.5 on it, and just say, hey, over under. I don't know.
I would stay away from this entirely. I don't have strong takes on where Tari Eason is going to go.
I don't either, but if I'm in the front court market, I could see Charlotte at 13 or 15 taking that guy instead of EJ Liddell and taking him instead of a Mark Williams or Jalen Duren. I think I would go, oh, God, this hurts. I'd stay away. Under if I had to. It's like, hey, you have to make a pick. I'd go under, but just ever so slightly.
Under if I had to. I think I'm more in the boat of stay away as well. Zach, number 5 or 6, Jeremy Sohan, 12.5. Okay, here we go. This is a fun one. I would go under on this one. I know it's juice -170. Look, you're talking to two of the biggest So fans on the internet. Like, we are really big Jeremy Sohan guys. We have been high on him throughout the course of the pre-draft process. I have him right now, I believe, at number 12 on my mock, which, you know, hysterical again that we're now 5 for 5. I think he has a chance to go anywhere like, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, basically.
Yeah, I would go under. Somehow, strangely, like, his stock was hotter a week ago. Like, if the draft was a week ago, I'd hammer the under, and now it's like sort of changed. I don't know why. Like, I don't, or they're bad interviews or the bad workouts. I would still go under, but I think it's closer to this number. Whereas a week ago, I'd say, yeah, it's 7 to 10 somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, we've got Mark Williams, draft position over under 13.5. The over is juiced -155. I would stay away from this because I think that the big market is very difficult to gauge right now. I would also stay away from, I don't know if Zach's going to flash up Jalen Duren's number, but I would absolutely stay away from the big market right now, because if San Antonio goes big, it pushes up everyone. Like, Mark Williams probably goes 13, and that creates an under. If Jalen Duren goes 9 or 11, or if Jalen Duren doesn't go 9 or 11, it probably pushes Jalen Duren to 13 and then Mark Williams down the board a little bit more. I think it's very, very difficult to gauge the way that the big market is going to shake out on draft night.
I would go over. And the reason I do is if it's things stay or remain as they are, where Oklahoma City's drafting before and 12 could be in play for some action there, I don't think they take a big. I don't think Charlotte having 15, knowing Cleveland probably won't take one at 14, so I would go over.
So here's my thing. I see that Jack V also commented on the they won't take a big thing at 14, right? If I'm Charlotte, I am taking my big at 13. If I am taking a big.
Yeah, safety. If you really like him, if that's like your guy, you're enamored, we got to do it. Yes.
Because then you run the risk of Cleveland getting bowled over by an offer by a team trying to jump you at 15 with everyone knowing in the process that someone is that you're taking a big at 15, basically. This is a game theory podcast, right? I think you have to game theory this out a little bit further. Yeah. And think about the way this would work. I do. If Charlotte is going to take a big, I bet you they will take him at 13, unless there are two of them on the board.
If there's two of them on the board, if there's both Mark Williams and Jalen Duren left, they say, hey, they're pretty close, but we like this swing man, this wing more. We're going to take it at 13. Cleveland, whatever. If you want to trade away and then take Mark Williams and spoil the party, fine. Duren's there at 15. But if one of those two, Duren Williams, goes earlier, then yes, possibly. Short answer, over for me.
Okay, Zach, give us another one. Jalen Duren, of course he did. Over 10.5. I'm staying away from this. I don't have a good gauge of what San Antonio is going to do, because San Antonio in general has a very secretive draft process. I know that Jalen Duren is the hot name right now with the Spurs, and a lot of people have him mocked there. Everything I've been told is that they're probably going to stick to their board, and that, like, it's not a guarantee that they take a big here versus waiting on a big at 20, waiting on a big at 25. Like, they have so many options for what they could do. If they have Jalen Duren as the highest person on their board, I can see it, but I'm not convinced that that is the way this will go. Are you?
I'm not convinced, and this might shock some people. Although it wouldn't be me, I'm going to go under. I would stay away from it. I kind of have an inkling that for a guy that is 19 in November, that he's looked good enough during the pre-draft stuff. He looks fantastic. I don't say good enough. He looks like you built him out of a laboratory. What a post player,
a
bruising, rebounding, running post should look like. I think somebody's going to fall in love, take him the top 10.
All right, Zach, give us another one. Oshai Ogbaji, over under 14. I'm very confused by this number.
Why?
14 is high, man. And for it to be juiced as high as it is, it under? Like, his over 14.5 is +150. I'm taking that all day.
The over, right?
Yeah, I'm taking over all too. Day.
I am plus, too.
This is one of my favorite that we've had so far.
Me too. That it does seem. I think we're using high low in other directions, but it seems like this number should be 17.5, and then I'd have to think about it. 14.5. That would basically mean that someone from New York, Oklahoma City, Charlotte wants in Cleveland take him. I don't know. Everything from Ojai, good, bad, indifferent, has been similar throughout the year. He's gotten a lot better, and then everyone just sort of slaughtered him like 10 through 12, and guys rose, guys fall. And he's just slipping down naturally just because of other guys making their ascension. It's not that he's done anything to hurt his personal stock. I think other guys have just helped a little bit more, and you start look at the age and second guess if he can be a 3-and-D guy and what else does he do. So I'm going to take over there.
Yeah, I agree. Over plus 150, that is like a very strong one for me. Zach, let's go a couple more. Dyson Daniels, over under 7.5, minus 195 juiced. I think I'm going over. Just slightly, just very slightly over. I have him at 7 right now, so this is a pretty dead-on number. If you're making me pick, I think I would go over. The thing that's interesting for me here is that the over-under is juiced so strongly toward under here at minus 195. Dyson Daniels over is plus 160. I think I like over 7.5 plus 160 if you made me pick here. But it wouldn't be far over. I cannot see him getting out of the top 10.
Agree. I'll go over. This is another trade-dependent one. With Sacramento at 4, Detroit 5, Indiana 6, Portland 7, even New Orleans 8. We've heard kind of like floated offers, whether real or not, but at least gauging the market. Those could be completely different teams. And somebody could just be leapfrogging to get him at 7 because I think New Orleans likes him at 8, San Antonio at 9. Stay away. I'm going slightly over, though.
All right, Zach, give us one or two more. Walker Kessler over under 24.5.
There's been like one easy one so far, I think. This is difficult.
Yeah, I think I have Walker at 25 right now. So either I'm on it or like we're getting similar intel to Vegas here.
That's great.
I think I would go over, to be honest. I think that this one's close, though.
I go over. Same thing. I was looking at my draft board and it said the 25th. It went Milwaukee, Kennedy Chandler, Dallas. I'm like, Kennedy Chandler, who's he drafting? Has a typo on my end, but I would go over there too.
Yeah. Zach, let's go AJ Griffin. Over, under 10.5 with the overjuiced minus 265. I would go over here even with the juice. Unfortunately, I don't think you can really parlay draft props, really. This would be like kind of one that's like kind of tailor-made to try and parlay to bring the juice down a little bit with something else. But, yeah, I think over.
Over by a couple, yeah. It's a good line.
It's a good line. All right.
They're all lines. You like the draft guide? Wait till you see what we have for you next.
Zach, one last one. Benedict Mathurin over under 6.5. Under is juiced minus 160. Under. I think he goes under. I think he goes 5 or 6.
I concur. 4, 5, 6. Yeah, going under.
Yep. I would be surprised if he got past 6. He's had a great pre-draft process. Guys across, coaching staffs, front offices really seem to like him, really seem to like the way he's competed in workouts and his overall level of just aggressiveness in there. Yeah, I think this is it. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back. We're going to answer your questions.
When sweet tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, they thought, why stop there? Why not create other exciting and unexpected combinations, like rainbows and ropes, or fruity and gummy, or chewy and more chewy? That's why they created fun treats like sweet tarts twisted rainbow ropes, gummies fruity splits, and chewy fusions. When you dare to combine, it's sure to blow your mind. Sweet tarts, dare to combine. Visit SweetTartsCandy.com to shop now.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Is crypto perfect? Nope. But neither was email when it was invented in 1972. And yet today, we send 347 billion emails every single day. Crypto is no different. It's new, but like email, it's also revolutionary. With Kraken, it's easy to start your crypto journey with 24/7 support when you need it. Go to kraken.com and see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Ventures, Inc., PVI, DBA Kraken. Visit PVI's disclosures at kraken.com/legal/disclosures.
All right, folks, we're gonna bring in Zach and That's Jacob. Fine. They're gonna come in, they're gonna chat a bit about these questions that we've got. I think we got a lot of great ones into Matt and I's Twitter mentions. We got a couple here coming on the YouTube chat, which is good. So Zach, Jacob, whichever one of you wants to go first, shoot Matt and I a question.
All right. Kind of perfect here because Walker Kessler was one of the last draft props you guys did. So at gymteacher215 says, if Walker Kessler is there at 23, do the Sixers draft him?
Why?
That's very specific. It's very specific.
Yeah, they've had a question with bigs for sure going back now. Like their backup center position has been an absolute nightmare for a few years now. If I'm drafting at 23, and I think the Sixers, just given Daryl Morey's draft history, he tends not to like drafting young players. I think he might try and use it as a trade chip in some manner, just given his past. That has nothing to do with what I've heard. That just has to do with me like judging Daryl and like knowing your scout on like the GM basically that's involved here. I think that if you're drafting at 23, you need to take a guy that at least has a chance to play in your closing lineup. Right. And I don't think that Walker Kessler has a chance to play in their closing lineup.
Yeah, you're drafting more or less a backup at that point, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd swing. That's what the draft's here for. You swing for potential starters, guys down the line. Although Walker Kessler's a good player, I don't think he starts with the pieces that they have. So I would not take him there. I wouldn't.
Yeah. All right, Zach, give us the second question.
All right, this question comes from Noah TH11. Which top 15 prospect could you see plummeting down the boards to 20 or even further?
Plummeting. So how far is our plummet here?
20. Guy that's seen as a lottery guy going in the 20s.
There's a world, despite me waving the flag for the last 3 months here. I think there's a world Malachi Branham could be that guy. That's the name that stands out to you the most that could go down to the 20s. Like if we talked about bigs, we talked about maybe Dern could go down 5 or 6 spots, right? Mark Williams could go down 5 or 6 spots. I have Malachi very high, I think 9 or 10. Most people have him around 15. If he ends up at 20 and people prioritize Ochai Agbaji or Dalen Terry leapfrogs him, that wouldn't blow me away either.
Yeah, Malachi Branham, I think, is the one that stands out to me. Ty Washington, we kind of talked about the jump, yeah, but his over-under now is like 19.5. So I don't know that he's necessarily seen as like that lottery guy anymore. But Malachi Branham, I think, is a good one, a guy that is still mocked, you know, top 15, top 16 pretty regularly, that I would not be surprised if he ended up falling down the board a bit.
All right, so from at Mikkel Nielsen, 00, what is the highest you see Usman Jang going?
number eight to the Pelicans, I would say. He is someone that fits a lot of the things that the Pelicans look for in prospects. He has versatility. He has ball skills. He has great positional size, an inconsistent jumper, which they just straight up believe that they can fix.
Yeah.
But he has like enough potential to shoot it to where it is fixable. I would say number eight is probably the highest I can see him going.
That's the highest, and the floor is no lower than 20-ish, right? It's like certainly in that lottery range, maybe late lottery at worst. And a guy that flew up, I don't know how late it was, January or February, when I circled back, I had him outside the first round. I'm like, I don't see this at all, and got better, finished strong, and I think I put him at 20th. I don't know how high he is on your board versus your mock, and some people were kind of like, how dare you have him 20th and not higher? Like, hey, I had him 43 like a month ago. I'm getting there. It's just an acquired taste. I like him. It's not even like it's not like a strength thing, because if I say he's too skinny, people yell at me and say, well, you have Chet number one, you idiot. And I agree with that. It's more just like the physicality, it's the rebounding. How does that translate to the NBA being 6'10"?
Well, he doesn't like going in the tough areas, I think, right now. It's a lot of, I'm going to take a little running floater instead of using my length and extend to finish around the basket. It's, I'm going to, kind of fade away at the rim when I'm going to try and finish. Not the most physical defender, although he has real tools defensively with his feet and with his length. So, yeah, he just needs to get a little bit stronger, I think, and a little bit more willing to go in those areas. Okay. Jacob, I think you asked that one. Zach, you're up.
Let's go, Zach.
Does fall to me at Thunder Draft. Curious, why is there such a vast disparity between Sharp and Hardy on so many of these draft boards?
Shaden is enormous and long and more athletic by a pretty substantial margin, while being a similar level pull-up shot creator. Hardy might have a little bit more juice off the bounce in general. Like, his craft off the bounce is very legitimate. I think he has a case as the best technical ball handler in this class, in terms of using change of pace and change of direction. And I have, Jaden Hardy at 20, and I have Shaden Sharp at 9. So I think I'm probably a little bit closer on these two than where other people are. But the difference is just like size and athleticism at the end of the day.
I have them almost like two completely different buckets. Like, I wouldn't even consider them positionally like the same player. Like, Shaden with his length can play up the lineup. Hardy's just kind of like a straight combo or two. Like, no way I'm having him guard threes. The explosion is a complete different level. Jaden's never had that. Jaden has a lot deeper range off the pull-up, especially in high school, like kind of in the gym type range where he can pull up from anywhere. And I don't think Shaden has that, but Jaden has better like functional shot creation. Like, he can do it without taking eight dribbles. It's like three or four that you want to get down to two, just like a step ahead a little bit in that way.
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right. So at Nick X Smith 30, outside of the obvious guys like Paolo, who are the most NBA ready guys in this draft and why?
I can kick this one off here.
Yeah, go for it.
It's Sam Payton. Keegan Murray is my answer, and he is in that, to reuse the bucket word, he's in the same bucket as Franz Wagner as me for last year. Just like, don't overthink it. It's going to translate. He has size. He's a different shooter than Franz, but I just had no hesitation on some, like, how does this fit? Like, does that work the way he plays? Yes, he can shoot. He can score in the post. The defense is good enough. He can play in transition, different paces. He's used to being just like a cog in the whole thing. He's used to being this heliocentric guy. So he's going to go into a place wherever the franchise is that picks him and just be ready to contribute from the first day. And he's a little bit older too, which I think helps, that he's 21 years old. He's not 18 or 19. The curve is not as steep as some guys. So that's my answer.
Yeah, my answer would have been Ben Mathurin, who I have at number 5 on my board. I think he is going to be ready to step in immediately as a movement shooter. Defensively, it might be a little bit rough early on. He just needs to engage a little bit more consistently on that end. But I think Ben is going to have no issues making an impact as a rotation player very early. I want to take a question here from Jay Black Productions in the YouTube comments here.
Yeah.
And I just want to give Matt the floor to be able to expand upon this. Can you guys help me out with Johnny Davis? I know you guys love him, but I'm landing more alongside Hollinger with his lack of separation, finishing, and shooting. Screams college player to me. Matt, I just want to give you one final opportunity to evangelize about Johnny Davis as a draft prospect, as you have done throughout the course of this year. Because this is the last time that we're going to be doing a pre-draft
this
podcast.
This is
a pre-2022 draft podcast.
Yeah. I read John Hollinger's article. He does a great job, puts in the time. I scrolled down. I kept scrolling and scrolled some more, and I scrolled. He's 29th. I think that is insanity. Yes, he was inefficient. He was. He took some bad shots. He had to. I believe in his own shot creation. I believe in how he plays off screens. I believe in the toughness that he has both offensively and defensively. He finishes well by the basket without being a super athlete. His competitive juice and fire is otherworldly in terms of like this draft, and that's why he's solidified himself as a lottery pick. The three-point shot has to get better. I'll own that. I'm sure he'll own that. I'm betting on the rest of the tools as a guy, as a sophomore who carried Wisconsin to the Big Ten title. I know that's like screaming college guy. 37 points at Mac Arena against Jaden Ivey and Purdue, that doesn't scream college guy to me. Hanging 30 on Houston in the Maui Invitational is not that. Carrying his team on one leg and then NCAA tournament is not college guy to me. So I'm in. My chips are in the middle. I'm pro Johnny Davis. I actually like him more in that like 7-12 range as opposed to 4-5, which I thought earlier. Better place for him to land, grow, develop, and be a piece.
Yeah, and you know, as Evan Glansman says in the YouTube comments, he has a Taco Bell commercial. So that's also an important note.
Which I thought was awesome that when you're with Andrew and Alex, one of the trivia questions was what Taco Bell product was in the commercial. And I was driving and I laughed and I'm like, as much as I like Johnny Davis and Taco Bell, like it didn't even cross my mind what he was like eating. I was like, oh, it's a taco of yeah, sorry.
I just trust Johnny Davis to figure it out on some level. Like, he's a great defender. Those guys figure it out. I understand that, like, there are worries about how his offensive game translates. That dude is just tough. Like, he is going to make it work at a high level in the NBA, I think. You know, how high of a level is that, you know, being the sixth man off the bench? Is that being, you know, a tough defensive starter who only takes open shots? I don't know, but he's 6'6". He is a very real athlete, and he fights his ass off on the court. He's considered the, like this on ball player only because of what his role at Wisconsin was. And I want to bring up this idea because I think that this is a really good point. I saw this on Twitter earlier. Mike Procopio, who, you know, was a scout for many years, now hosts a podcast with Andrew Bogut. He mentioned that there are 510 players in the NBA right now. And only 108 of them take at least 10 shots per game. The other 400 guys in the league are not going to be primary scorers. They need to bring other things to the table. I think that Johnny Davis's defense is going to allow him to stick. His ability to play off the ball defensively is going to allow him to stick at a real level. I am a believer in Johnny Davis. I have him in my top 10. I've come around on Johnny Davis from where I was later, or you know, at the start of the process a little bit.
Yeah, it's similar to what you said about Procopio about Brad Beal, how he talked to his AU program after a game they lost and blasted him and said, like, how many guys you know scored 20 points per game in college? Nobody said anything. It's like, all right, well, how many guys score that in the NBA? There's so few players that do that. I mean, you're talking about shot attempts. Johnny's going to be able to impact the game beyond just the scoring. He's not this guy that needs the ball in his hand to do it. He can do stuff off the ball and also probably played out of position. Similar to Ty Washington with Sevier Wheeler, similar with Kenny Chandler played like off the ball this year. I don't think we've seen like the fully optimized version of a lot of these players just based on college too. Same with Jaden Ivey, right? Jaden Ivey played on ball, off ball, yep. Clogged the lane. It's been beat to death, but we haven't seen the full Jaden Ivey either.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt, guys. Zach and Jacob, you're up again.
All right, I believe the mantle has been passed to me. At PNW Sports 503 asks, which prospect has risen or fallen the most since the season ended?
Probably Jalen Williams, right?
I would say Santa Clara. Jalen Williams from Santa Clara, Dalen Terry from Arizona, and I'd even throw in Blake Wesley in that bag too. Those are my risers.
In terms of risen or fallen?
Risen. I mean, when Blake Wesley declared, you and I potted, like, hey, it would be great if he, like, went back to school and played with J.J. Starling at Notre Dame. Like, yeah. That would be a thing. Now he's more mentioned, and who knows, but, like, people's personal boards, he's somewhere between 15 and 20. When we started, I had him, like, 30, 28. So a jump of 15 spots or so is significant to me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I have Blake, I think, at, like, 23, 24. I like him. I get it. I get the upside. I would say Jalen Williams at Santa Clara is the answer here. Look, at the end of the season, I probably had him in the 50s somewhere, and he is in the green room right now.
he is. Crazy.
He has taken everything and just run with it at the end of the day. In Santa Barbara, working out with, you know, the guys with BDA WME, he has taken it and run with it at the combine. Every opportunity that he's had, he has been absolutely outstanding in every capacity. And he made everyone notice that he is a genuinely elite or genuinely great wing prospect in this class. Maybe not quite elite, but his overall well-roundedness as a ball handler, passer, shooter really stood out. And then he's 6'6" with a 7'2" wingspan, and that always helps.
Who's the faller then? We can't cop out completely. That was the biggest riser. We got to go negative 10 a little bit.
Biggest faller. I mean, it might be Walker Kessler, like through no fault of his own, just like people realizing that, you know, bigs aren't crazy valuable anymore.
And that was kind of nuts too, because it was almost like a March fall. Like February, we're still middle of the first, and now we're debating whether or not it should go 25th.
Yeah. 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 I mean, like, does Pat Baldwin count?
Yeah, depends on kind of where you had him. I mean, where did you net out with him? Yeah, I have him outside the 30s. I do have that.
Yeah, I have him in the 40s. So
I have him 41st. So I think end of the year is 25th. So that's probably the biggest drop of mine. Walker Kessler, it's a good one. Those are probably the two. Everyone else is within 4 or 5 picks of each other. It's going down.
All right, Jacob.
So this one kind of relates to the best fits and the what each team should do episodes, which if you have not went and watched those, what have you been doing?
Hop on.
But at RohanDM99, so I'm asking you guys to stand firm on your best fits here.
I don't remember.
RohanDM99 says, what is your favorite potential team player fit in the top 10?
Oof.
I've come around quite a bit on watching Paolo and Jalen Green play the two-man game and just absolutely adoring getting a chance to watch those two, because you're not going to be able to switch it, because Paolo is going to absolutely obliterate mismatches in the NBA if he has a guard or a wing on him. You also can't really drop it because Paolo can shoot from distance and Jalen Green, you know, can kind of turn the corner on bigs pretty regularly. I just don't really know how you guard it in an effective way when both of these guys are like 24 years old. So I've come around on that one in a pretty big way.
There's has to be some moves to get there, because he's not going to be here by the 6th pick. It's been rumored, discussed. If somehow Jaden Ivey gets to Indiana, that's the pick that I like the most. Tyrese Halliburton and Jaden Ivey are just two very different players, the way that they attack in the half court, the way they play in the full court, the way they play defensively. With them being able to play off of each other, there's some shooters and a big and Miles Turner who can also step out and hit some shots, so he's not going to stand there clogging the lane the whole time. That's a very intriguing lineup for me.
Yeah. I'll also bring up Cade and Ivey as well. I think that'd be really fun.
I know. All right, Zach, you're up. Fire away.
We got a question from at Hizzy Hornet. Three guesses which team we're about to be talking about here.
The Nets.
From the Queen City, North Carolina. What should the Hornets do at 13 and 15 if they're keeping both of their picks?
Take one of the bigs that falls, Jalen Duren and Mark Williams. So here's a question. Here's a way to kind of spin this on its head a little bit. Does the fact that they're now talking to Mark D'Antoni change your mindset at all in regard to the type of bigs that they should look at selecting in this upcoming draft, Matt?
A little bit. You'll probably get more Jeremy Sochan type push, right? You see him, not the shooter, so everyone relax, but he's more of like a Sean Marion type big than whatever, but then what Mark Williams is, than what Jalen Duren is. So you probably slant more that direction. Or you mentioned it earlier in the show. Is like EJ Liddell more like 15, like the guy that you take to play more up-tempo, 7 seconds or less, and then take a swingman at 13? So it does shape it. I would get the horses to run with LaMelo, which we've talked about for a long time. So which of those guys can keep up? Who's your kind of swingman pick there? Because there will be some good, decent wing names on the board.
Yeah, if Sochan is there at 13, I really like that one. Tari Eason's a good one. I think they just need defensive help and like versatile defenders, right? Like Tari Eason, I think, would really help them just like in terms of energy. He'd also give LaMelo Ball a real running partner in transition because of his speed out on the break. Dalen Terry would be fun for them.
Do it.
Like that'd be really, really fun.
He feels like a D'Antoni type player too.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah. Just like wreaks havoc, just sort of all over the place, but nowhere at the same time. Like that's yeah, the guy totally. That I'd like. That would be a lot of energy in that backcourt with LaMelo too.
Yeah, Jalen Williams would be interesting as well as a guy that I think could play in lineups with both Terry Rozier and LaMelo Ball, given his ability to handle the ball on a secondary level. He can shoot a little bit. That one kind of stands out to me as well, is an interesting one for them. All right, Jacob, I think you're up.
Okay, so this one is probably a little more plummet vibes than the earlier plummeting question. So this at Mr. Roberts_23 said, who is this year's Sharif Cooper?
Oh, what's that mean?
The guy that's supposed to go mid first and falls to the 48th overall pick.
Oh god, man,
that's really tough because it was like Sharif couldn't shoot, right? I think he was like sub 20% from three or something like that. He was small, unbelievable as a passer, but you get into workouts with bigger guards and you see the length and the size. It's harder to adjust. I don't know if that guy's there. Kenny Chandler's like a better shooter than Sharif was. I don't see him tumbling in far in the second. I don't know, because if there was a guy, I wouldn't put him in the top 20 or so of my board that I felt really strongly about.
Yeah, it feels like the drops have kind of already happened. Like, if Kendall Brown is there at 40, like, that's not impossible, but I don't know if he's expected as, like, a mid-first anymore.
Well, you made a good point, though.
This is a hard one. This is a hard one.
I don't know. I think this is on your mock and not your draft guide, and we covered this last year too, is that the second round is a dice roll, right? There's a lot of two-way contracts, a lot of non-guaranteed stuff long-term. So once you crack 30, though, there could be some actually savvier agents that say, like, we're good, we're going to slide down. So if Kendall Brown goes, I don't want to pick on him, if player X goes, is slotted to go 27th and go 40th, that might have been their own doing too. Like, you don't have to overreact and say, like, I can't believe this guy slid so much. He may have slid to his own self-made decision of a team where he thinks he can go and earn minutes and get into rotation faster.
Yeah. I'm going to take one real quick from Ellison Orcott on Twitter. Vince Williams, drafted or undrafted?
Undrafted.
I think that he fits right into this mix, right? In terms of like, look, Vince Williams is probably going to be on a two-way to start next season. And whether or not that means drafted or undrafted, we'll see, right? I like Vince Williams. I had him as a priority two-way guy for me in the draft guide. As you could see, one of my top, I think, 10 names, 12 names, something like that. Yeah, I like Vince Williams. And the shooting is interesting. He's a good defensive playmaker. Teams have some worries about what he'll look like whenever he's matched against quicker guards. I think he actually guards a little bit better up the lineup as opposed to down the lineup. But yeah, I like Vince Williams as an interesting dice roll as a two-way. Whether or not that means he gets drafted, I don't know.
Yeah, possibly. I would say no on drafted, but possibly yes on making a splash in summer league. Someone
unexpectedly. Okay. Zach, you're up.
So at Trust the Void wants to take a little bit of a step back and wants to know, What do you think so far about the G League preparing and helping these prospects get to the NBA?
Matt, you go first.
Great. I like it. I actually enjoy the program. I've been to their games in person. The biggest thing about the G League is they are prepared. It's the rubber is beating the road faster, and you better be ready. There's nowhere to hide. There are NBA veterans and guys crawling their way back in the league, and the Jalen Greens, the Jonathan Kamingas, the Jaden Hardys, they have an enormous target on their back. It's not small, it's an enormous target, because they know all the NBA teams that have these picks we're talking about are watching their games because of that. So if I play for the main Red Claws and I'm playing the G League Ignite, I know I'm going to turn it on. And if I'm a defender, I'm picking him up from 94 feet saying, try to beat me, kid. So I think they do get prepared. At the same time, there is a level of exposure, and that's going to happen at one time or another, whether it's in the G League, whether it's getting drafted in summer league, whether it's in training camp. So it speeds up the clock and the process. I do think those guys are prepared, but it's a harsh reality, and you have to be able to adjust to it. I think some of the guys have, some of the guys haven't. It's a really good measuring stick, and I'm all on board for continuing to grow this thing.
Yeah, I think that it speeds up the clock is a really good phrase for it, right? Because you got to be ready. You got to be ready to go, as I think Jaden Hardy learned this year. He struggled early in his G League career. And because he struggled early, I think a lot of people weren't as willing to look at the fact later that he adjusted and was pretty good over the course of the last month he was there in the G League. So I think you got to be ready. I think that you have to absolutely be good to go from day one. Otherwise, it's going to be tough for you. I really think that it has a chance to hurt you as an NBA prospect if you're not ready to go. But if you are ready to go, like Marjon Beauchamp was, it can really help you. I think that him playing in the G League and showcasing what he showcased against other pros particularly helped him way more than what he would have been helped doing it against college players. So if you would have looked at his numbers and he was a sub 30% 3-point shooter against college players, I'm not sure teams would look at him as a potential top 35 pick. Yeah,
totally. And the NBA has been smart about having the G League showcase and then being in center stage there, playing at All-Star Weekend and new stuff. They're doing little twists too, because it's different. You don't have March Madness. You don't have the Final Four playing in a football stadium. And not everybody in college. I mean, Paolo Banchero was the last man standing, but not all those guys had that opportunity. But they're doing their best to kind of replicate within their world what the big time will be as like a quasi-pro amateurish type level.
All right. Jacob, I think you're up.
Indeed. So ASAP Afra said he would like to know what the most realistic Jeremy Grant trade that you can think of is for the Pistons to snag another first rounder.
You're Mr. NBA, so I pass that one to you, Sam. I couldn't even tell you. I don't know what's realistic anymore, because we you joked before we hit record, turn off Twitter, which we do so it doesn't buzz. But also, I don't know what tweets are realistic, who has actual intel. The trade machine breaks my brain. So this is you, senior writer at The Athletic.
Yeah, kind of hard. I think that I'm trying to figure that out. Like, looking at the team, I don't know if there's one for like a pick out there that makes sense, right? Like, everyone is connected. The Portland Trailblazers and number 7. I would not trade number 7 for Jeremy Grant, as we said throughout the process. Just kind of looking down the board, like, I think that the Wizards would be better off using number 10 to try and move for a lead guard. I think that the Knicks would probably be a little bit better off using number 11 to try and, you know, maybe you can make a case that it's like number 11, Nerlens Noel, and like Alec Burks for Jeremy Grant. But the problem is, if you do that, it makes it harder for you to open up cap space and then like potentially fill the point guard position via cap space. If you're moving like Noel and Burks, you're probably trying to do it into open cap space in order to create space for someone like a Jalen Brunson, someone like a Kyrie Irving, potentially now, given Shams' report yesterday. So, yeah, I don't know that there's one for like a lottery pick that is out there in my mind. I wonder.
The Pistons want to go up though, right? Like, don't they want to get up in that top four? Like, they're not, I don't know if 10, 11 is doing much to move the needle for them. I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have it. I don't have the deal off the top of my head. It's harder than you would think for someone as good as Jeremy Grant. And I think that, the fact that he has 1 year left on his deal makes it even more challenging. Yeah. Which is a shitty answer. I'm sorry to whoever asked that. I know that.
Garlic,
like, yeah. But it look like I hope that like that kind of helps you kind of, you know, navigate in your head. I don't know if there's like a top 14 pick out there for Jeremy Grant right now that would allow the Pistons to like pick up another, you know, lottery pick in this class. I think that Zach's up. Yeah.
Yep. So I'm heading over to the YouTube comment section to see some of the great questions rolling in. And Michael McAfee has a great one. What is the value that Chet Holmgren uniquely poses to the Thunder in light of their desire to play five out?
Incredible value. It's hard to find these guys that allow you to be that are rim protectors, that can handle the ball and like grab and go, that like this Chet Holmgren in my mind actualizes everything that the Oklahoma City Thunder have wanted to do under Mark Daigneault. Like every single thing, like they've tried to play up tempo. They've tried to play guys like Isaiah Roby and Darius Bazley at times at the five, in part because they want to grab and go. They want to speed it up. They want to get moving on the break. Like, to make that work defensively is very difficult. Chet Holmgren is so good at grabbing and going and passing and shooting out on the break while also being an elite level defensive player, that this is a no brainer to me. This is it. This is kind of what they've been looking for in order to actualize things. And he would unequivocally be number one on my board if I was the Thunder.
Yeah, and could be, right? Could be the guy they want first overall.
Yeah.
Everything you said, and it's just like he's not a point guard, but he can grab and go, right? He'd take it off the rim and press and take the ball to court, hit threes, go out of the rim, kick out, block shots down the other end. He does so many things that you wouldn't expect or anticipate for him. He surprises people with his versatility on both ends, and not there yet. That's the other thing. Like, he actualizes it that he needs time and development, and the Thunder continue to stockpile picks, assets, move up the board. He's not a guy that's going to steal all these extra. It's not going to like plummet their draft stock because they in the future, because Chet's going to be so good. He's going to take a year or two. I've said that a lot, maybe 3 years. So it stays on their developmental timeline for their franchise too.
Yep.
Jacob. All right. So this is a kind of a fun one because it gives you guys a little break from this year's specific prospects. So Michael on Sports would like to know a prospect from your early evaluation days that you completely missed on.
How long is this? A great one.
Yeah, you miss on a ton of them. I mean, you know, I still miss on guys. This is really fucking hard. NBA teams still miss on guys that like do this professionally. It's a constant learning and growth process. So, you know, early evaluation days, you know, you certainly miss a lot. I would say the one that stands out to me that I've always called out is Rudy Gobert. I didn't think he could move at all. Whenever I watched him play in France, I just did not believe that that would work. I did not understand it. Didn't get it. I knew he was big. I knew he was long. He's done an incredible amount of work on his frame. And what I didn't know was how much of a worker he was, how like tough he was, how strong he could become. I just saw kind of an uncoordinated guy that, you know, wasn't quite as good. And I think that you take every opportunity like that to try and learn how to get better at this. And like you, he's one where it made me realize, like, you just unequivocally need to know the background on these guys. You can't just blindly be guessing on prospects and, you know, have a good feel for it.
How about the other way? How about a guy that you had way too high?
Guy that I had way too high.
You can chew on it. I'll start.
Yeah,
with,
you go. Yeah.
A couple. Scott Labissiere. I didn't think he would miss at 6'11".
Yeah.
Block shots, run the floor. I quickly realized once he got to Kentucky that, like, ooh, I don't know if this is like a clean fit. Like, I didn't think draft night he should have been a top five player. Like, he ended up, I think the Kings drafted him late in the first round. But in high school, they said this is an NBA All Star. I don't know what he doesn't do, and a lot of people fell for it. He beat up Carl Towns at the Nike Hoop Summit, and people were ranking Scal way ahead of him. Emmanuel Mudiay is my other one. I had really high. I thought he was going to be a surefire, no-brainer all-star with just the creation, the strength, what he could do off the dribble, played overseas when successful. Shooting matters. It does. And that kind of held him back some.
Yeah. Let's see here. I'm kind of going through
the archives.
I'm going through the archives of CBS when I was really not very good at this, writing at CBS.
I think you're pretty good.
Yeah, I'm better at it now than I was. Let's see here. So April 10th, 2015. So this is the Carl Towns draft immediately after. Oh, I really liked Chris Dunn. That's a good
Chris
one.
Dunn. Chris Dunn's a good one.
I quite liked Chris Dunn. I thought that he would be an all defense guy that I thought there'd be like a lot of what we see from Jrue Holiday, basically. All defense guy, super physical. And I think he is that on defense, but the offense just never even came close. Was way too wild. I knew that the handle was loose, and I still just didn't, you know. I still just decided to have him at number four or number five on my board because I thought that he could tighten it up, and I was wrong.
Yeah, I was a little bit lower, but similar. I was a little bit biased because Chris is kind of from the area. Played for CBC, Connecticut Basketball Club, was around here. I actually coached him on a camp team before, so it was almost like a rooting interest too.
Oh, this,
like,
is your fault. Your okay.
Yeah, yeah. Before we even met, this is like Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind or something. Like, it's already happened, and we just erased the memory.
All right, let's do one or two more. Let's finish on a – I'll call the one that I think is a good one when we can finish on it.
All right, I believe I'm up. Heading back to the YouTube comment section. Is Josh Minot worth a low first round, high second round flyer? And yeah, I'm not quite.
He's not swimming the ocean. It's Josh Minot. It's one of our sweet babies.
I wanted to add a little fancy.
That's good. We're very classy.
Do we? It's like here's a good question.
French podcast. Josh Minot. Beautiful.
Do we think that if Josh Minot was a French prospect from France, given all of his tools and athleticism, do we think that he would go in the first round?
Yes. That's kind of like, do you remember the Jason Capono tweet, I think Twitter existed, quote back in the day? He said, if my name was Jason Kaponovich, I'd be a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
If it's Josh Minot, probably, right?
Sekou Doumbouya went in the first round. Yeah. Like, this is...
If he's on the same team as, like, Usman Jang, it's like, oh, Minot, Jang, who do you like? Yeah, they'd be probably right there.
Mbanyama, we're all here, baby.
And we're not on track. Okay, so low first.
Playing for Center Federal. Let's go.
Again, John Hollander stole my thunder. I think he has him like first overall or 10th or something. I have Josh Minot 38th. I still believe you take a second round flyer. Second round's just like kind of whatever. This drop in the draft after 20 is hard for me. So I would low first round. There's a few other guys I feel more comfortable taking up to 30. If we're talking 31, non-guaranteed money, we can get him in there. Sure, let's take a flyer. He slashes, he cuts. He's a very good passer. The jump shot is wild. Defends a lot of spots. He's the guy that the second round is kind of made for, in my eyes.
Yeah, I agree with Matt. I have him like at 40. I have not been as high on Josh throughout the entire year. I get the appeal. I like Minot. I would have liked to have seen him go to like LSU or something this year, where he would have gotten to rock. Cody Topper. The reason I mentioned LSU, Cody Topper recruited him to Memphis. He's now, I believe, the lead assistant at LSU. Is he not?
That sounds right. I know he's at LSU. Yeah. I think it's so, at least as
much. Yeah, like I think that would have been a really great fit. But we'll see. Yeah, I think the second round is made for guys like Josh Minot. I think that Matt nailed that.
Yeah.
All right. So this is the one. We've all been waiting for this. J. Craw 14, getting the producers involved here. Question for the new producers.
You call which, your number?
ISO for the producers.
Bill Russell, sub for myself.
With which player in this year's draft do you most disagree with Sam or Matt's evaluation? Oh,
let's go. Take it. Come on, J. Craw.
Zach, I'll let you lead the
way. They made a burner account to ask your own question. Go ahead, Zach. Let's go.
Yeah, Jacob, we're not falling for that one. I saw you
tweet that about an hour ago. I'm not channeling my inner KD, okay?
I mean, I'll keep it quick since you guys don't tune in to listen to me. Brady Manek is just being disrespected in this year's draft. That's all I'm going to say. He's being disrespectful.
I love it.
Was the part of the interruption back? No, it was, I don't know, whatever. Like, around the horn, get the minus points. Just, like, hit the button, like, 10 times. What are you doing here?
Brady Manek. Brady Manek, two-way contract guy. Let's do it.
Tournament Brady Manek, where he was, like, whatever, 86 for 94 from three. Yeah, absolutely. I fell into that trap before. Johnny Juzang, I argued on this podcast, was a top 25 pick. I don't know if Johnny gets drafted. We can't get blinded by these little windows of games. Take the whole thing, which also calls into data points in the draft. It's like there's the background, there's intel, there's pre-draft, there's the turn. Take all of it into consideration and not just the tournament. Sorry, Brady. Great year, great run. We could be lower. I don't think he's a zero. Just I don't have him being drafted.
I have him as a top 100 guy. I got him. I am. Yeah, I'm probably one of the few Evans top 100 guy, to be honest. I like Brady Manek enough, but if he's on a two-way, I wouldn't like hate that by any stretch. All right, Jacob, where are we at?
My disagreement here is going to really make Matt's head just explode because it's also going to make my UNC alumni explode as well. I'm higher on AJ Griffin than I am Johnny Davis. I'm sorry.
It's not
because I'm anti Johnny Davis. It's more like the long ball is so valuable. You know, AJ shot 4.1 a game. Johnny Davis shot 3.9, 45% compared to 30. They're both, I mean, Johnny's a little better defender, but I just think AJ's ceiling is higher. He's 2 years younger. Like, I don't think taking him above Johnny is a bad thing.
So I have AJ Griffin at 12. You would have thought I had him at 212 based on the vitriol I have received by having him 12th. My AJ Griffin hang-up is this. If he doesn't shoot it, what is he? What does he do? Because we just talked about the guys that get 8 shots a game, 10 shots a game, right? Johnny Davis is shooting 28% of the field. He's still going to defend. He's still going to rebound. Still going to compete. Not that AJ doesn't do that, but we talk about the defense is a problem. Playing off the ball, he can cut a little bit, but the creation off the dribble, he's not like a great passer. So if the three-point shot, he rolls out and he's shooting 31% from three, how does he stay on the floor?
Valid. Yeah, I think I might also have PTSD from watching his ceiling game at the Dean Dome.
That's true.
But I mean,
Louisville game.
It's just really like good. If he can ever learn how to create and get to his spot, I just think like his ceiling is so high.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree with you too.
I'm with that.
Arrows. Yeah,
I'm with that. All right, Zach. Jacob, say goodbye as Matt and I finish up here.
Good job, boys. Great questions. Way to work.
All right. Penny, what have you been watching?
I can't get out of Josh Minow. It's so good. So good. I'm going to wake up at like 2 in the morning laughing about it. Nothing new, but. I finished We Own the City, and I finished Stranger Things, which kind of hurts a little bit because – I love Stranger Things. I thought it was fantastic. The episodes were just long enough where it was like, for me, when I had an hour, they're an hour 20. So sometimes I'd like cut it, watch it the next day. So it seemed like for 3 weeks straight, once I got home from the road, I was watching some installment of Stranger Things. So then when it ended the next night, my wife and I were like, well, what are we going to watch now? That was kind of our show. They hit all the nostalgic things. It doesn't try to be anything it's not. They did a great job of portraying high school is not just like the normal shtick of like, here's the jocks and the bullies, but more nuanced, more layered to it. Love the show. I'm excited for July 1st, the next installment.
Yeah, I adored Stranger Things. It's just the best show. I have so much fun watching it. It is, yeah, I love it. I've started watching Abbott Elementary, which is on, I think, ABC. It's on Hulu,
Yes, I've seen the preview.
It is unbelievably good.
Really?
It is so funny. Like, Laura and I have put it on at the end of every night over the last, like, 4 or 5 days. And it's, like, a nice – the way that Laura put it is, it's a nicer version of The Office. Like, just a sweeter, like, hilarious version of The Office. And I agree with it. It's so funny. Like, the principal, Ava, and, like, they're all just hysterical. They all make me laugh at an incredible level. Like, I that show should win many Emmys. It is, like, between that and Ted Lasso for me in terms of what the best comedy is on TV.
Have you gone back, and I know this is also just a repetitive thing, have you gone back and watched The Office at all, like, semi-lately?
Yeah. Yeah.
They would not be able to pull off, like, half the stuff they pull off there either. Like, I laughed through
it. Not even a little bit.
There's not – this was, like, a moment in time. They moved on. Like, can't even, like, look back. Later seasons do drag a little bit. I wasn't as much of a fan, but the early stuff is so good. So good.
Yeah, like, up until season 6 or 7 is when you're, like, in a pretty good spot. Basically, as soon as Michael leaves is when you can stop watching, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's unbelievable.
And there's so much value to just, like, a show you can watch out of order. Like, I don't know if Stranger Things popped up and it was like, oh, this is season 2, episode 5, if I'd, like, stick around.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with that. Penny, anything else here? Anything, like, you want to get off your chest before this draft starts here?
Off my chest before the draft starts? No, not really. I feel complete in a sense. Like, I have a very clear head. It's not crowded. I went through a week ago where I just want to destroy my whole big board and said 1 through 4 is crazy. Like, go the complete opposite direction. Dalen Terry should be 5th. I've come back down to earth a little bit. So, more than anything, I'm excited and prepared for a wild Thursday night. And I don't want to do too much between now and then because there's going to be so many trades. And I think the draft's going to look a lot different than what we just talked about tonight on over under odds. But that's what makes it fun. That's why we tune in. Hopefully tune in here.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of tuning in here, we are going to have a draft night live stream. I don't know what time we're going to start. Probably right around, 7? We'll do, like, 30 minutes before the draft starts.
7:30,
Probably.
I don't know what time it is in your world. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, my brain is so broken right now. I don't even know what time the draft starts. But we will be here. You will be able to come and watch us break down all of these fun players as they go to their new homes, their new destinations, all of the trades that occur. It's going to be really fun. Please join us on draft night. It's going to be great. For Jacob and Zach, producers of the show, just the absolute best. That's Matt Penny over there. Please tell the people where they can find your work.
Find me on Twitter, Matt_Penny. Thank you for all the new followers this week. Guys are way too kind, way too nice.
Yeah, Matt.
For the most part.
Matt's fine.
Yeah, good fine. For him.
Go subscribe to The Athletic. All of the great stuff that I've done pre-draft has gone up. Mock draft is up. Draft guide is up.
I was going to say, draft guide. Yeah, draft guide.
Please go read the draft guide. Like, that's the move by all stretch of the imagination. That's the one that you're going to want to read. That's where you're going to get all the information you're looking for. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe to the show on Apple, iTunes, SoundCloud, whatever the hell you're
Spotify,
using. Spotify. That's the one. Spotify. That's the big one. Last thing is subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. That really helps us continue to grow the page, grow the channel. Until next time, though, we will talk soon. We will see you on Thursday. Oh, additionally, I have a off-season preview podcast coming with James Edwards tomorrow. So you're going to have some good stuff coming before the draft. But until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.